Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host today. We have Nick True. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to be here.
Good. Well, we brought Nick on because we've had a lot of interest in the topic of budgeting. Those of you who aren't interested are going to turn it off, but I can tell you it's a really important topic. I think the stuff we're going to talk about today is going to maybe change your mind about a few things. So Nick, maybe you can kind of tell us a little bit about your background, your story.
I kind of had a very traditional background. I went to school for mechanical engineering, was always very kind of math oriented, science oriented. Met a girl there in college that I ended up marrying, and she was kind of on the same path, very traditional, went to graduate school as a physical therapist or to pursue physical therapy. And while I was doing engineering, and we graduated and got a job as a engineer and started making my way. Along the way, we discussed and found that maybe that traditional path wasn't exactly what we truly wanted. And we started looking outside the box at some other alternatives. And kind of a long story short, we now have found ourselves living in an RV full time and traveling the country. We've been on the road for about 2.5 years, have made a bunch of changes, and neither one of us use our current degrees, engineering or physical therapy anymore. And budgeting is sort of a tool that we've used all along the way to make a bunch of those different transitions and constantly prepare us for the next transition. And so it's something that Hannah and I are really passionate about, and something that we talk a lot about, because to me, budgeting is really more about, okay, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with your life? And then let's make a plan to use your dollars to help you pull that off. So that's sort of the quick 30-second version of where I came from and where I'm at now.
You're going about it the right way. I mean, when you're thinking about what you want to do in life, and then you kind of back into what you need, I think what most people figure out is, oh, I need to retire. I need $1 million, but they don't know why they need $1 million, or they don't know what they want to do. They're really just primarily focused on the money aspect and not focused on what they want to do. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how you look at it?
You know, for us, we've sort of changed the way that we do planning, for lack of a better term, over the years. These days, after reading a handful of different both business books and productivity books and learning how different people plan and make game plans and structure and strategy and stuff, what we sort of landed on for us is a combination of a vision of where we want our life to be in 3 to 5 years, and then focusing on the next 6-week period. And that's kind of how we do it. So for us, what that looks like is every 6 weeks, Hannah and I have a Google document that we keep up to date. And in that doc, we have dates. So January 2022, January 2025, January 2030. And under each heading, we have a list of bullet points that we want to hit. Then when we talk about that on a 6-week cycle, we will then focus and say, okay, knowing where we would like to go, knowing what we have in mind, what do we want to focus on in the next couple of months? What do we want to focus on right now in the here and now that we can actually make progress towards? To like give you a couple of ideas, right? That's a little more concrete than being so vague. For January 2021, for example, we sort of have three different areas: life, family, and finances. Under the life category, we've had travel to at least 3 of the following places, and we've got a handful of places that we still want to hit on our US travels. And then in our family, Hannah and I are planning to adopt kids in the future. We aren't planning to start that process by January 2021, but we want to have read a few more books and done a little bit more research. And then as far as our finances, we like to have enough money towards a down payment on a rental property investment by January 2021. And then we have bullet points like that for 2023, 2025, and 2030. And so then what we do is hyper-focus on the here and now and say, okay, given where we would like to go, what can we focus on for the next few weeks? And does our current budget and how we're spending our money align with that and help us hit those things? And so for us, we go through that planning process every 6 weeks and sort of reevaluate, and allows us to adjust and review the budget regularly and make sure that we are in fact using our dollars in the most effective way possible based on where we want our life to go.
So why 6 weeks? I've read a book, was it called The 12-Week Year?
12-Week Year, yeah.
It was just phenomenal. So why 6 weeks?
So 12-Week Year actually was what I read right before we moved to 6 weeks. And I loved The 12-Week Year, and it shifted our mindset in a huge way. And we did move to 12 weeks, and we did 12-week cycles for almost all of 2019. At the end of 2019, I read a book called Shape Up by Ryan Singer. He is the lead product developer at Basecamp, just kind of a tech startup company. They write a lot of books around sort of business and thoughts in that world. Now, my wife and I are in a little bit of a unique situation in that we work together in the business full time while we also are married, right? And so for us, we found that 12 weeks, even partly because of the stage of our life being so mobile in an RV and working in a small business, that we almost 12 weeks was almost too long, and sometimes big changes would happen. That's been especially apparent in 2020 with COVID. And so we cut 12 weeks in half, basically, and moved to 6 to try and give ourselves a quicker reset cycle. But in general, I think for most people, 12-week cycle is probably adequate and something I'm really a big fan of.
I tried the 12-week year in Q1, and it was probably my best quarter I've ever had. I found it to be tremendously helpful to kind of really focus my intentions and my efforts. But it's really comes down to the mindset, right? That kind of where it really culminates from, how it works.
You know, the whole premise of the 12-week year, if you could sum it up in like 2 sentences, would be humans are really bad at estimating. And we tend to overestimate the amount that we can get done in a day and underestimate the amount that we can get done in a year. And so if you just move annual planning to quarterly and you plan a quarter like you would a year and you frame your mindset that way, you can just accomplish so much more. It also gives you the opportunity to reset, reflect, and maneuver. And I think that's the big piece too, is humans, our lives change and things change and our desires and our wants change. And a lot of times we get so stuck in the same habits and we just kind of do the exact same things and we don't really ever allow that conversation to happen and say, well, actually, what I wanted 2 years ago is not the same as what I want anymore. And so having a built-in kind of reset button that allows you to pick your head up out of the day-to-day and look to the future, I think has been what's so huge for us. And that's, like I said, that's been especially true this year as so much has changed.
So let's talk about the reset, as you're calling it. I know that when I went through my 12 weeks, I kind of just kept running through the 13th week and I felt it in about week 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the reset? Because you said you shortened it partially because of that.
For us, the way that we structured it for 12 weeks was that 13th week truly was, let's say, an off week. And so whether it's in business or like in our personal life, we legitimately carve out time to do nothing but talk about the future and talk about the next little bit and review what has happened. And so this could be as probably little as half a day. It'd be hard to do it, I think, in less than that. We try at least twice a year to take a full like 3 days, you know, go away. And like at the beginning of each year, we typically will take an actual like retreat. We'll go rent a cabin somewhere and get away for 3 or 4 days and talk about our life and our future and where we want to go. And we talk about the past and some of the questions that we go through for the reset piece are just sort of doing the, if you're familiar with like a military after action review, it's very simple. Okay, what went well about the past 12 weeks? Okay, what didn't go well, right? If we're talking about budgeting, it's what categories in our spending we were not able to rein in. Are there any recurring themes, good or bad, that we kept seeing that sort of led to what happened? And then are there any specific opportunities that we should learn and then implement for the next 12 weeks? And that's it. So it's very simple where we just sort of review. We then look at our life vision, like I said, that Google Doc that has sort of the next few years. And we ask ourselves, like, has anything changed? Do we still agree with sort of the bullet points that we have here? And 80% of the time, we don't change anything. But every now and again, something legitimately does change. And we make note of that and we refine the life vision. And then we focus on, okay, going forward, what do we want to hit for these next 12 weeks? And where do we want to change and improve?
That's really important because I know that I felt on 13th week, I actually felt it probably around then, but didn't hit me until probably like 14 or 15, I felt burnt out. Like I was just running so hard that I was just getting like burnt out. I took like a slow week and then I took another slow week. You know, I took a few slow weeks just to kind of catch up. And this has happened to me a few times when I really kind of burned the candle to both ends. But I think it's important, just all that's going on, and especially as people are dealing with COVID and dealing with the, it's such a psychological and emotional hit for people that a lot of people are not really grasping how this is affecting them. They might not be mindful of the actual effect that's occurring because it's just, if you don't understand it, you're not maybe aware of it. So why don't we talk a little bit about how this requires a certain type of mindset to be, you're talking about a 6 week year, if you will, and then COVID hits. How does something like that play into your plans? Like how do you adjust that way?
For us, what happened is we had just started. I mean, we had just started a cycle and, you know, we're, I don't know, a week or two in. And, you know, COVID had been kind of happening slowly all year in 2020. But then in like early March, at least that's what it seems to me now, is kind of when it really hit the fan and things really started changing. And so, at least here in the U.S. So what we did is we actually kind of paused. We had a meeting and we said, okay, we just scrap, you know, for the most part, everything we had said, the projects we were focused on, the things in our budget that we were focused on. And we said, okay, let's reset again. And sometimes, you know, there's big enough life events where you just have to do that. And we kind of did an abbreviated planning version where the main thing we focused on was two questions. Number one, what opportunities exist now that previously didn't exist, right? So what is actually special about COVID that allows us to now make a change that we could not previously have done? That's more of an offensive mindset, right? What opportunities are here that we can take advantage of? And I don't even really like that word because it's not exactly what I mean, but it's more of a, you know, what opportunities are here that we can go on offense and look to come out of this better? The second question is what opportunities exist where we need to go on defense and we need to sort of hole up? Most people, this is true in a lot of areas of finance, most people tend to focus on making more money or focus on living frugally and spending less. Some people focus more on the frugal budgeting piece and some people focus more on the investing piece. And I just think it's both. I think defense and offense is important and you have to play both sides of the ball. So for me and Hannah, we sat down and we asked offense and defense for the business and then offense and defense in our personal life. And we made a list, brainstormed list of all the things we could do to go on offense and defense in both areas. And then we just picked a few that we thought would be the most effective and impactful. And we ran. And so a couple of those that came out of that were speeding up the timeline for us to get a rental property. We've been talking about investing in a rental property for a long time. We've been sort of slowly putting away money for it. But we feel that one opportunity that may come out of this whole pandemic is good real estate prices, right? Potentially. And so if that potential happens, if that opportunity comes up, we want the cash on hand ready to do it. We looked in our budget and tried to find places to cut and places that we can shift money around so that we can accelerate the amount we're saving towards that. So that's one kind of shift we made. So that conversation, though, was to me the important piece.
I love the way you're thinking about it too, because the agility mindset is really important in anything you do in finance. I mean, certainly in budgeting and, you know, it plays just as much of a role because you can't predict a lot of things. You couldn't predict COVID. You can't predict.
No.
Just things happen, health problems, you know, you decide you have an opportunity that you can't pass up. So that agile mindset's really important in budgeting as is in other parts of investing or finance. And I agree with you on the rental property, although I think we probably have, you know, 6 to 18 months before we start to see impact people, because it seems to me that the real estate market is probably going to be affected first because there's no bailout money for real estate owners right now, rental properties. And you can't kick tenants out if they're not paying. So I think there's going to be some issues there. But at some point, that's going to happen. And I totally agree. Having cash is really a smart way to do it. Taking a step back more towards the budgeting, you made a comment of the being frugal in budgeting versus making more money. I know there's this kind of theme amongst the blogging community, amongst just people in general of, you know, well, I just need to save money or I just need to make more money. Can you talk about how people are looking at that and what's really the best way to look at it?
One of the great things about what I've had the opportunity to do over the last few years. So I've gotten very lucky in a lot of ways where I've built a small reputation around a very specific budgeting tool. And that's allowed me to do a lot of one-on-one coaching with a few hundred people over the last few years. And that means I've seen a lot of budgets, real life numbers. And what I can tell you is that people making $2,000 a month up to some of the budgets I've seen are people making a couple hundred thousand dollars a month. And a lot of the problems are the same. Yes, is it easier to find places to cut if you're making high income? Of course. But the vast majority of people who make high income find themselves in a place where either the people that they're around are influencing them or their own kind of wants and desires rise. But the tried and true, we raise our level of spending to meet our level of income, is so true. So I think inherently, I just come from this place of making more money is great, but it's very easy to just spend more money. And so unless we're thoughtful about it, making more money won't solve your issue. It just exacerbates them. I tend to come from this place of, if we can get really clear on what matters most to us and create a budget that allows for that, then we can get used to living in a certain way that we actually really enjoy. And then if we increase our income from there, it grows that gap, right? I read an article years ago from Paula Pant that really influenced me on this about growing the gap between your expenses and your spending, or expenses and your income. My beef is that you do get people in the blog sphere that basically say, listen, there's only so much you can cut, but focus on income. And I'm like, yes, I agree, comma, you've still got to find a point though. My other argument here, Kirk, is if you look at the sort of science behind human behavior, it's generally agreed that somewhere between 40 and 60% of our daily actions are based on habits, meaning we're not consciously making decisions. We are subconsciously making them. And this is the type of food you buy at the grocery store, the places you choose to eat, the route you drive to work, which pant leg you put on in the morning. It's all subconscious. And so if you were to tell me that every single time you swipe your credit card, your debit card, or you pull out cash, that you're making a conscious, well thought through decision, I would tell you, I just don't believe you. What I encourage people to do is, budget is not a bad word, and being frugal is not synonymous with budgeting. The whole purpose of a budget is, at the end of your life, you're going to have a set amount of money that you made. Even Jeff Bezos, when he dies, there would be a finite number that you could add up. Now, it'd be a really big number for him, but it would still be a finite number. And what I want to do is help people spend as many of those dollars as possible in the most effective way possible to get the values that they care about the most. And I just think that because humans are acting so subconsciously, most of the time, a lot of our spending is not going to the things that we value the most. And what a budget does is it helps show you where your money is going so that then you can adjust and make changes to ensure that your money is going to the places that you really care about. I love budgeting and I spend a great deal of time talking about budgeting, but I wouldn't describe me and Hannah as naturally frugal. There's lots of places that we spend big money. We're just very clear on what matters to us and where that money's going to go.
I like that. And you mentioned something that made me laugh, the pant leg. If all of you who don't may not believe this with the habits, I would actually argue it's probably more like 80% plus that your life is habits. And there's a lot of science behind this showing that willpower is, it takes hold when habits are not being used. We have a finite amount of willpower. It's not like somebody's better or worse at it. Just there's a finite amount. The more time and energy you're spending on using your willpower, the less you have for other things. So when you mentioned the habits with the pant leg, the listeners don't believe me. Think about which pant leg do you put on first?
Yep.
Like, I honestly don't know.
To me, it's I can tell you right now, for me, it's always my left leg. To put my right pant leg on first would just feel weird. Like, I can't really even do it in that way. Like, I mean, I could obviously, but it is just so ingrained.
Yeah. It's just something you don't think about. It's probably the same right. Every day. You don't think about it. It's just one example of that.
How many times have you driven your car somewhere, like somewhere you normally go, work, visit a certain friend, go to a family's house, and you show up in the driveway and you like don't really remember driving there? Right?
Yep.
It totally happens.
It does. Yeah. Where did that day go? What happened today? I don't remember. Yeah. I think it's being more mindful about where we are is, you know, throughout the day, I think it's an important thing. But when your days are built on habit, it's hard to to do different things. Getting back to the budgeting though, so how do you go about the budgeting? We have an idea how you look at it, but what's your methodology of figuring this out?
There's a lot of ways that you can attack a budget. Some people, they'll use like the bank account budget, right? Where they just automate certain savings and spending, and then they just utilize the bank account to sort of live out the rest. Some people want to utilize like envelope-based style budget with like cash where they withdraw a bunch of money. I personally, and I don't think it works for everybody, I do think that there is some nuance here and everybody needs to find their system. Personally, Hannah and I use what would be considered like a digital envelope system, right? So we have 40 or 50 categories, and this could be built in Excel. It could be built in Google Sheets. It could be done using Tiller. I use a tool called YNAB, but it's not the only one that can do something like this. And essentially, you have a whole list of categories or envelopes, if you will. And what I always tell people is if you don't have any record, if you haven't been tracking your money and really don't even know where your money's going, don't try and make big changes to your behavior out of the gate. When you're first setting up a budget, set up what I tend to call a tracking budget, which basically just tracks how you're currently living your life. Do a month or two, just sort of seeing how you spend your money, allocating it to the right places as it comes in, and then go, wow, okay, so we spend that much on Amazon. Okay, good to know, you know, and don't really beat yourself up, but just sort of pay attention. And then from there, we stop doing the tracking thing, because ultimately tracking is, if you don't change your behavior, then what's the point? From there, we want to have a proactive budget where Hannah and I sit down during these conversations and we talk about our future. We talk about this vision and these where we want to go, right? And then we work that back into the budget and say, okay, if we're serious about buying a rental property, or if we're serious about traveling in an Airstream, or if we're serious about getting another dog, how much money does that cost? And where's it going to come from? And so now we create a line item in the budget for that. And we actually allocate money every month, every paycheck, to make sure that thing happens. And that's part of the sort of regular conversation. And if you're single, regularly having a conversation either with some very close friends or even just with yourself, scheduling your own time to sit down and think about where you want to go and allocating your money to it. So I use digital tools to do it. Like I said, I use YNAB. From a practical standpoint, in the most simple term, it's as you make money, before you spend those dollars, you decide proactively, what do I want to do with these dollars? Okay, I want to put that much aside for groceries. Okay, I want to put that much aside for eating out. Okay, I want to put that much aside for rent. Okay, I want to put that much aside for the rental property because that's a priority. And then you sort of, when you run out of money, you're done. You don't get to spend anymore, right?
There's some psychological challenges with budgeting as well. Can you talk about some of those, what you've kind of experienced and maybe other people experience around that?
So there's a couple of things that tend to hold people up. And I think anybody who's listening, the number one question to ask yourself would be, if you've tried budgeting before and it hasn't stuck, the number one question would be, what do you think has gotten in your way? So for some people, they go too complex. They create 50 million categories and they're trying to track everything under the sun. And it's just so overwhelmingly complex, they just stop doing it. It's too much time. And so for those people, I'm saying, okay, you need to find a very simple budget. You need to find a simple system that you can run very quickly. It requires very little time. For some people, it's they just forget. And so it's similar to working out in that way, right? It's okay, how can I do little bitty things to get the budget in front of me as often as possible? One simple way I've done in the past is the home screen on my phone. No apps on the home screen, on the main one, right when you log in, except the budgeting app. So there's some little things like that. But honestly, I think the number one thing that I've seen hold people back is a lack of clarity on their vision of where they want to go. Because if you can get really clear on where you want to go with your life and why you're doing what you're doing, then that reason can be so compelling that it can help you overcome sort of the little bitty blocks along the way. And so the sentence I typically use, like when I'm working with folks, is you need to fill in the blank. I want to budget because blank. And if I don't, blank. And the key is you have to make that a really emotionally compelling reason. It cannot be, I want to budget so that I can eat out more. If I don't, I won't be able to go out as much. It's not compelling enough or strong enough to push through. And so some good examples would be, I want to budget so that I can make a plan for leaving my job that I really dislike. If I don't, I will be chained to a job that I hate forever and not be able to leave. Another good example would be, I want to budget so that I can ensure I can take care of my own retirement. If I don't, I will become a burden to my own children and I will feel bad because I will know that I have held them up in planning for their own retirement and my grandchildren because they needed to take care of me. It's all about getting really clear on why you're doing what you're doing so that it can be really compelling to push you through.
That last one's pretty compelling. As you were saying, it just kind of hits me like, wow, like that's really compelling. I don't want to be a burden to my kids.
Nobody does. That's the piece that I've seen, which is, I recently read a book by Michael Hyatt that I loved called The Vision-Driven Leader. And in it, he had a quote where he said, you won't drift to a place that you would have previously chosen. And just this idea of, if you're drifting through life, you're never going to end up in a place that had you thought about it, you would have chosen to be there. It's just not going to happen. The only way you're going to end up where you would like to choose or where you would have chosen is by actively, proactively making a plan to get there. If we boil it down, the main reason I budget is just to avoid regret. It's to ensure that I'm using the money that I have and the resources I've been given in the best way possible so that I don't regret what I've done with the resources that I got.
That's really powerful. We're going to wrap it up here in a minute, but I had a few kind of follow-up questions because I know that you're traveling around the country right now.
Sure.
So what do you do for your permanent residence if you're a mobile traveler?
So I legally live at my parents' house, which wasn't too terribly difficult because, so I'm fairly young. I'm 26 years old, right? And I lived at my parents' house legally, as far as the government was concerned, through college. And then Hannah and I got married. We lived on our own for a couple of years. Then we moved into an RV. So it was very easy legally to show like a moving residence back to my parents. So that we just kept it easy. But there are RVers, full-timers, who are able to just move their residence. And there are actually companies that will help you do that and help you move your residence too. There's a couple in Florida and a couple in Texas as well, and help you do mail forwarding and things like that.
I always kind of wondered that because I know there are people who are, you know, full-time RVers. Yeah. And I always wondered, like, where do you live? All the small stuff that you don't think about, like getting your mail, like, you know, where's your permanent residence and your tax returns? Like all of that stuff that requires you to actually live somewhere.
Yeah.
To me is interesting.
It is. And it's, you know, most RVers, full-timers will move legally their residence to Florida or Texas for the no income tax reasons. Both our parents live in Tennessee, which is a no income tax state. So for us, it was very simple. Let's just live there legally. All my mail goes there, keeps things nice and simple. But I mean, these days, everything is almost all digital. If I do get a little bit of mail, my mom opens it, sends me a picture of it. If it's something I need to take care of, I do. You know, it's just not that big a deal.
Let's wrap it up here. I really enjoyed having you on, Nick. Tell us a little about where people can find about you.
My wife and I run a podcast together called Mapped Out Money. I've been doing YouTube videos for a long time, also called Mapped Out Money. So if you go to YouTube or go to Apple Podcast and type in Mapped Out Money, it'll pull it right up. And we talk all about the same kind of stuff, right? We talk a lot about making a plan with your money so that you can live the kind of life you want to live.
Well, now we're heading into the panel portion of the show. This week, we have a big panel. So we have Barbara Friedberg. How are you doing today, Barb?
Doing great, Kirk. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you on. We also have another returning panelist, Megan Gorman. How are you doing,
Hi,
Megan?
Hi, Kirk. I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. It's a sunny day out here, and that's a good thing.
Exactly.
We also have our very own Miranda Marquette. How are you doing, Miranda?
Getting through it.
All right. Miranda is bringing us right up.
It'll be good. I'm excited for this discussion. So I think that's going to be awesome.
Glad to have you here this week, Miranda. And we also have a new panelist. We have Mark English. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing well, Kirk. Thank you. Thank you for having me on today.
One of the reasons we brought Mark on is I work with Mark, and he has such a great story about how he started to incorporate budgeting and YNAB specifically. So we wanted to bring him on just to kind of share his story because I think it's a really powerful story. And it's really part of the important part of what we're talking about here because the B word can be very intimidating from people. But I think when you kind of hear how people are applying it, it makes it much less intimidating. So Mark, let's kind of start with you. So tell us a little bit about your story, kind of where you were before you started to use YNAB and kind of what it did for your life.
Many years ago, about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was becoming a financial advisor. And my wife and I, we'd been married for about 4 years. And we both came from very different backgrounds. when it came to our relationship with money. You know, I don't want to speak necessarily for her, but her father grew up in World War II Germany. You know, obviously a time that was very, very hard for a lot of people, or they literally were experiencing what felt like the end of the world happening. And I think her father's experience definitely shaped her mindset around money. And for me, I grew up in an environment where money was tied to a lot of things, but it wasn't really talked about a lot. There wasn't a lot of real understanding of, at least for me, how to see money and how to live, be with it. Coincidentally, even though we had these different backgrounds, we both had a mindset of scarcity in our approach to money. And we weren't deliberate with our understanding of our incomes and how we were utilizing our cash flow to align with ourselves. And it became very stressful in our marriage because we were not in control of our finances. And as I was myself learning to become a financial advisor, and I was studying and learning as much as I could, I realized, what good is all that I'm learning if I'm not applying it in our own lives? So I sought out deliberately many different ways to try to bring control into us. And we're living in times right now that there's a feeling of a lack of control. There's a feeling of a lack of certainty about the future. And when you're in these moments, I think it's so important to look within yourself for what you can control. And using the tool that Nick was talking about, YNAB, for myself and for Roseanne, my wife, it helped us bring control into our lives when it came to our budgeting. And it allowed us to, and again, we didn't use, first we tried YNAB, where they have an automatic sync with our bank account and it can try to pre-populate different categories. That wasn't working for us. And instead, what we did is we got really radical in terms of setting up our own categories and doing manual entries every week. It's not like we said, this is what we're going to try to budget for, and we try to set that goal. Instead, we just let ourselves observe our habits. And in that, we developed the habit of really digesting what was happening with our cash. And what came from that was a real sense of control. And the stress level in our marriage went significantly down. I'm giving sort of a very high overview, and I'm not going into specifics of what we did, but YNAB did certainly, and again, YNAB is just a tool. As Nick had said, you can use an Excel sheet to kind of track your cash flow. You can use the envelope method. But we use YNAB, and for us, it was a game changer. And the one thing during this pandemic that we've been living through and all these different uncertainties, what hasn't been an uncertainty is our control, our sense of control over our finances. So it's been life-changing for me. And where we are 2.5 years later is remarkable in terms of where we are.
Thanks for sharing that, Mark. I think it's really helpful for other people to hear the impact that it can have, because I think your story resonates with what a lot of other people are going through. So I think it's helpful to hear that. Megan, what are your thoughts when you hear Mark tell his story?
It's interesting because I think regardless of your asset base, this is something that everybody struggles with. This is the first time I'd actually heard Nick speak, and I thought he was amazing in how he broke it down. In Mark's story, he used the word control a couple of times, and that's really what it means to have a successful financial life, is to feel that you are in control and you can handle all the different pivots and challenges that come in front of you. One of the things that I always tell people, particularly clients, is if you want to have a healthy marriage and a healthy relationship, some of the work that you have to do together is doing the more unfun things, like putting together a budget. Or as I've joked on the show before, when you deal with wealthy people, it's cash flow management. It's really important in a relationship to be working together on the numbers, because, and I think Nick mentioned this, we all have this weird perception of things, right? I think he brought up on the show, people think things will take less time than they actually do. And I think when you've got two people who have their own perceptions and their own experiences in a marriage coming together on how do you manage your cash flow and your budget, I think they're coming from two totally different directions. So I think tools like you need a budget or the Excel spreadsheet or the back of the envelope approach really is very good, healthy marriage work, because the two things that people fight about are sex and money. And so this at least tackles one of them. You're on your own with the other one.
That's beyond the scope of this show.
Yes, we can talk about that later.
Appreciate that, Megan. Barb, what are your thoughts?
I loved the session. I thought Nick and his wife, Hannah, are freaking incredible. 26 years old and that disciplined and that focused, I thought they're a model for many, many people. My experience is, if you're trained in the way to watch your money, to budget, great, then you're on the right path. If you're not, then you need to make a decision. And you need to decide what kind of life you want. Do you want a paycheck to paycheck life, or do you want a life where there's a gap between what you earn and what you spend? And that gap is the money that you can put together for your future. I've budgeted since I was 22 years old, and I used Quicken. I don't totally love it. I've written about Quicken and alternatives, but it's worked for us fine. I think Mint is also really good. But I think the key takeaway for listeners is that you need to live consciously. You need to, when you spend, you need to make sure it's spending on something that is aligned with your values. So don't go through life mindlessly spending on XYZ if it's not important to you, if it's not giving you a return on your dollars spent. So I've said this before, and Megan and I have an ongoing chuckle about this, because cars are not my thing. I don't care about cars. They're not important to me. My car's a 1998. It's fine. I don't drive that much anyhow. And I spend very little on my car. On the other hand, and that's a deliberate decision, but on the other hand, I spend a ton of money on travel. I spend a lot of money on decorating because those are things that are important to me. So it's really important to align your values with your spending.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I also want to reiterate, I think that both Nick and Hannah are very brave, because what they're doing is really stepping outside of the box that kind of society lays out for us. And it takes a lot of courage to do that, to do what you want and to go out and really kind of take control of your future. I have to give them a lot of credit in that area. I listen to that story and say, wow, that'd be really cool, but I don't think I'm that brave. I don't think I could do that. Miranda, what are your thoughts?
So I really like this idea of sitting down. The thing I like about tools like YNAB is that they're designed to force you to make a connection with your money and remain connected with your money. So I don't personally use YNAB or something like that, but I do go through and I still, a lot of the times, reconcile my accounts at the end of each month, because even though it's really easy to do now with all the software we have and how easy it is to like look at your stuff online, just sitting down and having that connection with my money is a really good way for me to like check in, make sure that I'm still, as Barb points out, spending in alignment with my values. And I don't have like a strict budget, but I do have like a spending plan, and I have an idea of, okay, these are the important things. These are the values that I have. These are the most important things for me. So if you go down and say, okay, well, I make sure that money is automatically transferred from my account to from my checking account to my retirement account. My rent is set up to be paid automatically, all of that kind of stuff. The contribution to my travel fund, the contribution to my son's 529, even my charitable contributions are set up automatically. So with all of this automation, it would be really easy for me to like become disconnected from my money. And so by making sure that at least once a month, I sit down, look at everything, reconcile my accounts, I remain connected, I have the big stuff covered and it's all automatic. And then I just pretty much spend until it's gone. And so being able to say, okay, well, wait a second, am I still spending on the things that matter to me? Oh my goodness, why have I spent so much money on XYZ? I don't even like X and I'm not super fond of Y. Why am I spending so much on this? And then I can take a step back and readjust and be very conscious about that. So I think having that connection with your money is huge.
The disconnect with people with money is really important. And I think this is where the mindset comes in. So Mark, you work with, you know, a lot of clients in this area. What do you find are some of the biggest challenges that you see with people and their budgeting and taking control of their money?
It's scary to think about how people spend their money. It seems like such a big thing. I think the natural tendency is just kind of put your head in the sand. You know, most people don't automatically ask themselves with respect to how they're spending money. First of all, I don't think they necessarily always think about, and not that they should. Part of the reason of being mindful of this is to create a second nature within yourself where every time you have money, so when you have money coming in, there's a way to look at that as sort of your life energy is being brought into yourself. And then you're dispersing it back out again. And where are you dispersing it back out again? Are you dispersing it back out again mindlessly? Or is it being done with a specific purpose? Is it being, how much are you spending for yourself? And how much are you thinking about yourself? And are you deliberately asking questions such as, what do I want? Why is this so important to me? And how is this going to make me feel when I have it? And am I committed to what it is I'm spending money on? And that's what we're trying to do when we're implementing this kind of deliberateness. It's not that you have to ask that literally every time you're spending money, but it's that when you're spending the money, you've already gone through the process of thinking through that, which is what you've done with the tool. Instead of thinking about it as this big thing of budgeting and whatnot, if you could break it down into some ridiculous, into the most ridiculous smallest bite, you know, there's the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. So if every week, if you just pick maybe a 15-minute period when you have a paycheck that comes in and you just found places to allocate it towards certain categories, some, you know, some categories, it could just be rent, mortgage, et cetera. But there can be other aspects where you'll see extra cash left over and then you could put it towards movies. And so when you go to the movie, you're not just doing it randomly, you're doing it with purpose because you thought it through, at least for a few moments. And I think that's what's scary is, you know, there's the quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes, which is, has to do with getting to the far side of complexity. I would not give a fig for the simplicity, this side of complexity, but I would give my life for the simplicity on the other side of complexity. It's about getting to that other side. And that is scary to most of the people that I speak to. It's how do you get to the other side? You have to make it very small to be able to get there.
And Megan, I know a few of you have mentioned tools you use, but Megan, you work with ultra high net worth audience. What tools do you use, if any, to kind of help people through that process or to help them engage more with this cash flow process?
Part of it is with having a greater amount of assets, you have more complexity, more accounts, more things you're paying for. What we try to do with clients is actually let us use a bookkeeper whenever possible to put together their expenses. And this becomes really, really important as we get closer to retirement, particularly since if you were to look at a lot of my clients' balance sheets, you'd be like, well, that person could retire today. But a lot of them, as their asset base has grown, their expenses have grown. And so they can't afford to retire given their current cash flow burn. That's why for us, using a bookkeeper and being able to go through the cash flow that way makes a big difference. Now, people don't need to have a bookkeeper. There's a lot of great tools. I think Barb mentioned a bunch of them. They're great things to use to just get a look at the numbers. Again, the numbers, and I always tell this to clients, the numbers are merely data. And you have to decide how you want to react to the data, if you want to use the data to change your behavior, or you're willing to accept the data as is and work longer or change your life by deciding not to retire or always be working or always be consulting in order to meet those cash flow needs. But having the numbers there forces the honest discussion. And having honesty with your money is incredibly difficult. I don't know if Barb said this or Mark said this or Miranda, but somebody said you have to be conscious about what you're doing. And honesty is part of that.
And kind of getting into the honesty part of transparency with yourself. So Barb, and we talked a lot about kind of setting intentions and habits. Kind of in your experience, how does that come into play when you're trying to deal with cash flows and budgeting?
First of all, I want to put out there that I'm privileged. I'm very, very, very lucky for two reasons. And one is I was brought up with amazingly money-conscious family and very kind of deliberate spending family. And second, my husband and I are 100% in accord in how we spend. Our values are the same. So that makes it really easy for us. I get that most people don't have that good fortune. So Someone mentioned habits. And if I can bring in another example, I used to be very fat when I was a late teen. And so I conquered that through developing the habits of smart eating. You can do the same thing with your money. If you create the habit of being smart with your spending, if you learn the skill, it is a skill. And I guess You Need a Budget is a really good tool to help you with that. I'm sure there are other tools as well. But you need to develop the behavioral skill. Think before you buy. Set up a spending amount. If you're out of money for that spending amount, that's kind of like the envelope method, you're done. I came across the most brilliant budgeting method 20 years ago, maybe. And Miranda actually practices this. She may not know where I found it out, but Jane Bryant Quinn, who's a very well-regarded financial journalist, first off said, automate your saving and investing. So you've got that taken care of. You're planning for your future. You have an emergency fund and you have an investment account. Then whatever money left, you can spend it. You can budget if you want. If you don't want to, you don't have to, because you know that your short-term emergencies are taken care of and your long-term financial future is taken care of. So everything else you can spend. So those of you out there who are saying, I hate budgeting, I can't do it, I don't want to, this is an alternative.
We've been talking about kind of different, you mentioned you were privileged at the beginning of this for a few reasons, for the family upbringing. And you kind of get me thinking, because we're talking about a variety of the demographics here, whether it's the wealthy or the middle class or people who are less privileged. There's different dynamics that come into play with each one. And cash flow is important for all of them, just in different ways. What's important is different. How the challenges that they face are different. It's really important just to understand. If you look at somebody and they're really wealthy, like they don't have the same challenges you have if you're not, but they still have their own challenges. Miranda, how do you look at those differences from where people are coming from? What can people take away from that consideration?
I mean, that's the hard thing, because like I didn't always manage my money the way I do now, where I can automate a bunch of this stuff and then know that the important things are taken care of, and then I have enough money left over to do everything else. That's not how I started. I actually started when my then husband and I were freshly married and pregnant. Like, we had a budget and it was down to the penny. And that's one of the things that we fail to realize, is that sometimes it does start with this budget that's down to the penny, to say, okay. And there were times like I would be in the store with my calculator, adding everything up and trying to decide if we could get a $2 pint of ice cream as a treat that week at the grocery. This in no way is indicative of, I didn't have to deal with systemic stuff. We were grad students. We were doing the poor grad student thing and did not have to deal with everything else that comes on top of systemic issues that hold some people down and make it even harder to overcome. So I think too, part of your money management comes from the stage you're at and being realistic about where you're at. I have worked with people who are like, oh my gosh, how can I manage all of my expenses? What can I cut? What can I do? And the reality is you're done. You can't cut anymore. And now you need income. You need more income. And we need to figure out where you get that income. Because there are people who are extremely good with their money and extremely good about doing their best with their money, but they still can't get ahead. And so I think that we need to be able to address that and look at, okay, not only what are the causes that we see with individuals that are getting us here, but what are some of the issues in our wider communities? And what are some of our issues in terms of policy that are getting us to this point where somebody can work for 40 hours a week at a minimum wage? Like, there is no place in the country where a person can work a minimum wage job for 40 hours a week and afford their modest rent. There is not a single place in the US where that works. I'll get you a link you can drop in the show notes. So, I mean, I think we have to look at not only the individual, but we also have to look at the wider system and say, okay, what are some of the root causes of this? And kind of go from there.
You'd mentioned something that actually next week after this episode, we're going to be talking about financial literacy, which is a huge problem in our society. No matter where you're from, what your background is, it's financial literacy is a problem. It's a problem that is culturally or from a society perspective has not been really been solved as a way that I think it should be. So Mark, we talked in the episode about setting intentions and habits and about planning timeframes. How do you look at that from your perspective when you're talking to people or yourself?
For myself, I try to shift out of the mindset of scarcity and more into a mindset of abundance. And the way that we worked on that ourselves was to basically set up a T-chart and to ask ourselves what's important and what's necessary. There are necessary things, as was just talked about, with it's very difficult for one person of a couple to make enough to be able to pay for rent. The rent itself, that is a necessity. You need to have a roof over your head. But I think to clarify what's important is more important than the necessity. I weighed 330 pounds. 5 years ago. I now weigh 245. When I weighed 330 pounds, on the way to that, I tried a lot of different diets. And so I looked to see what could I take away. And I think that was a mindset of scarcity, going on a diet. For me, I shifted to a mindset of abundance to lose the weight that I did. And the way I did that was to add a little something, maybe every year. So like 1 year, I just said, no more cookies. But I could have control over that. And then the next year, I said, I don't want to just do that. I want to be able to add something onto this. So I added on doing 10,000 steps every single day. I got really radical with that. I found an app that let me track that. You know, I have a Fitbit that monitors my steps. And I did that. All I did was just that for 1 year. And that was remarkable. And then I just started tracking the food I was eating after that. And not in a judgmental way. I just started to observe the food I was eating. And as I was observing and just writing down it every day, instead of trying to take away more food for myself, just observing what I was eating, I started to get a real sense of control over what I was eating. In that mindfulness, I was able to say to myself, okay, I've had enough. Like, I'm full now. We did the same thing with money. We just observed for a period of time how we were spending money. And in that, the deliberateness, we started to see the age of our money really grow. That's one of the things that YNAB is really good at measuring. It's called the age of money. How quickly, when a dollar comes in, does it go back out again? Our age of money now is about 64 days, which means on average, when we're spending money, it's being spent by money that came in 64 days ago. That develops tremendous resiliency. And you start to see that effect in just your bank account, because suddenly, instead of having, you're always almost at that red line where you have $0 in your bank account, now we have, you know, a much more significant cushion all of a sudden. And all those dollars that are there, they're all allocated to something. And it's developed this mindset of abundance, of feeling like we're in abundance and not feeling as if we're in scarcity.
I love the conversation about the abundance versus scarcity. That plays into so many areas of mindset. I've certainly had that growing up. Dad grew up in the Great Depression, and there was a lot of scarcity there. And that's how I was raised, is you got to be frugal. Scott background, so frugal anyway, or thrifty, as we call it. And I think that played in certainly from how I was raised. And that scarcity mindset was really there. And it's really hard when that's kind of drilled into you at a young age to kind of work through, no matter how you were brought up, whether you're brought up because you didn't have means, or whether your parents had a money mindset of like the Great Depression, which if you have parents who grew up there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just this mindset of scarcity because there wasn't anything there. No one had anything. You're lucky to have food. So there's an understanding of why that scarcity was there. But that once you start thinking of things in a different way, once you kind of flip the script on yourself, it really allows you to change the way you look at things and change your money mindset. So I love that conversation. I think it's really important. I also wanted to touch on one other quick thing, which we talked about in the interview and we didn't. Mark, you kind of touched on it, but we didn't delve into with the interview with Nick, was limited willpower. I mean, you talked about cutting out cookies for a year as an example, or doing one thing. One thing that I think is intimidating, if you've never done a budget before and you're just going to throw yourself in and just start doing it all, that's really hard to do. We all have limited willpower. And if we're trying to save money learn how to budget, lose weight, get a new job. You have like five things on your plate. You just can't do all of that. Your willpower is limited. You're not going to be able to do them all at the same time. What people find helpful is to focus on one thing. Mark said, try one thing for a year or whatever amount of time works for you. But just focus on one thing at a time, and that will allow you to be a little bit more successful in your endeavors as you're trying to make these changes. Let's kind of, in the interest of time, wrap it up here. So Megan, final thoughts on these topics, and where can people find more about you?
Again, loved the interview. I thought he was so insightful. And I think it's important to always know we're all going through the same issues. We're all struggling to figure it out. And so these tools are out there, and it's always worth a try so that you can have that honesty with you and your spouse about what you truly spend, because it allows you to have more control over your financial life. You can find me at Forbes.com/Megan Gorman or on Twitter at Wealth Intersect. Thanks for having me, Kirk.
Thanks for coming on, Megan. And Barb, final thoughts, and where can people find more about you?
For people who have never budgeted before, this topic can be very overwhelming. Like Mark was describing with dieting, what you want to do is just take a small step today, and monitoring goes such a long way towards figuring out how you're spending and actually influencing your spending. So start by just taking one day and writing down everything you spend. You may be surprised. I'm Barbara Friedberg. You can find me at Robo Advisor Pros, where I talk about everything digital investment advising, and also Barbara Friedberg Personal Finance. See you next time.
Thanks a lot, Barb. Miranda, final thoughts, and where can people find more about you?
Yeah. When I was talking about being able to afford rent, they put the affordable rent situation at 30% of your income using that rule of thumb. So there is no state where you can keep your rent to 30% of your income for a two-bedroom apartment at minimum wage. There is no state where you can do that. So honestly, I just think it starts with taking a look at your money. We always talk about, let's track your spending. Let's see where your money is going. And I really think it starts, any sort of budget, any sort of spending plan, anything you do starts with saying, all right, what have I been spending my money on? And does the spending match up with what I say I value? And then once you figure that out, you can kind of move forward and figure out how you need to budget, how you need to change the way you spend, and what you can do to either bring in more money or make what you have last longer. So you can find me at MirandaMarquette.com. I also have resources on my website that can help you see how I manage my money to live the lifestyle I want, and they might be helpful to you as well.
Great. Thanks for coming on, Miranda. Mark, final thoughts, and where can people find more about you?
With respect to final thoughts, what Miranda said is correct about minimum wage and affordable rent of the 30%. But there are, again, I think that's kind of looking at it through the traditional paradigm. I know of someone who, they love to sail, and they figure out a way to live on a sailboat with their kids, to sail around the world. They've done it for 8 years, and they're doing it at the poverty level, in terms of income. And they're happier than you could possibly imagine. And that's because they got very deliberate, and they were kind to themselves, and they were willing to just observe what they were doing with their money and had shifted that into alignment with what made them happy. So it is possible. And that's what we do. And that's where I work, is with Innovative Advisory Group. You can find me at innovativewealth.com. And we talk about aligning your core values with your cash flow.
Thanks for coming on, Mark, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Kirk, for having me on.
Yeah, and I also like to thank Nick for coming on the show. It was a really insightful interview with him. I really enjoyed it. He lives a different lifestyle, and it's something that takes a lot of courage to do. But as Mark said, if you're intentional about what you want, you can design the life of your dreams. And given what's going on in the world with people that are stuck in their homes, probably makes sense to relook at that. You have time to do that and just figure out what you want your life to look like. So my name is Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager of Innovative Advisor Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on the show. So that's it for the show this week. Thanks again for joining us on Money Tree Investing Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out the show at moneytreepodcast.com. On the website, you'll find access to all our show notes, resources, as well as the archive shows. We'll also have a bunch of these links that have been mentioned on the show, as well as some tools that people can use for budgeting. And lastly, please leave a show rating and comment on the podcast app of your choice. When you subscribe and rate the show, it allows us to have better access to some of the top guests that you're going to want to hear. Second to lastly, PPS, we're going to be looking for listener feedback, and we're going to be sending out a link on the email list. So if you want to participate, provide your feedback for the show or any questions or comments, please sign up for the email list, and you can do that on the website, and you'll be able to give us your feedback. So have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.